I'm Sharad Kutin.
You're watching Consider This, the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Now, you may notice that tonight's show looks a little bit different. That's because Sharad and I were both primary contacts to a positive COVID-19 case, and therefore we're both self-isolating and working from home. So we're not in our studios at the moment, but we're trying to put together a show for you from our respective living rooms. And today's news of the emergency being declared is far too important to miss discussing on the show. So we have joining us tonight a prominent economist and former senior UN official, Jomo Kwame Sundram. Jomo, good evening. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. Now, do you think that a state of emergency is warranted now, today, compared to, say, a couple of months ago, back in October, when the bid for emergency rule was then denied?
I think a state of emergency was not warranted in both circumstances, but for slightly different reasons. I think we had an MCO announced last evening, and that MCO would actually be quite adequate given the way the government has defined the problem. However, it is my belief that it is quite possible to better handle the COVID-19 epidemic in this country without resorting to nationwide, or at least part of the nationwide shelter lockdown. They have demonstrated a much more effective way of dealing with COVID-19, particularly in Asia, and even in countries such as Vietnam, Laos, and even arguably Thailand, and of course in Kerala in southwestern India.
Jomo, isn't then simply the politics of self-preservation working itself out? I mean, after all, the Prime Minister Muhyiddin Yassin lost his parliamentary majority just a few days ago. And after weeks of threats from UMNO, which is, in many ways, his cornerstone party support within Parliament. Is that what's working its way out, working itself out, rather, today?
Well, I cannot really speculate because I'm not privy to a lot of information which is relevant. But this is how it is being perceived by many people, not only in the chattering classes, but even by ordinary people. They see the situation as one of largely preservation. If we refer back to the other emergency declarations in the history of independent Malaya and then Malaysia, even then we find that they did not involve the suspension of parliament in at least two or three cases. If you think, and the Prime Minister was cited the Privy Council case, but of course we know that before that, Parliament was convened in 1959 after the first general election in independent Malaya, and then subsequently, of course, despite the confrontasi with Indonesia, there was Parliament continued to be convened in 1964. So that in and of itself is not necessarily an indication of the need for the suspension of parliament. Suspension of parliament and the question of an emergency are different issues, and they have been combined, understandably, by the incumbent government for reasons which I think most people presume they know.
Well, Jomo, I want to ask you, your thoughts on what are the reasons that the Prime Minister gave for declaring this emergency was so that the private sector could be co-opted into the fight against the COVID-19 pandemic with emergency ordinances. Now, I know countries like Spain and Ireland in the early days of the pandemic when cases were spiking, they all nationalized hospitals to battle the pandemic. Now, do you think that this is the right move for Malaysia to use emergency ordinances to co-opt private sector assets?
Well, I think the situation seems to be quite dire in some parts of the country, and there may well be the need take over and cooperate with the owners of these privatized health facilities to better deal with the crisis. I do think that we have long been advocating an all-of-government approach and a whole-of-society approach, and this is absolutely necessary. But that in and of itself is no reason why you need an emergency declaration. There have been many instances in the past in many societies, and even in responding to the COVID-19 pandemic, private facilities have been for example, the situation in Argentina and other places. And this has happened in many instances all over the world without a declaration of a state of emergency.
You know, in listening to what the Prime Minister's address, do you see any hint of the government recalibrating its approach to the pandemic, addressing policy blind spots, increasing testing, and so on? We recently had, over 40 public health officials, in an open letter to the Prime Minister urging a recalibration, a re-strategizing. Do you see any of that in the recent pronouncements?
Well, I think as you hosted a session with Minister Khairi Jamaluddin last week, at the end of last week, and in that session he indicated a certain openness to many of the suggestions in the memorandum signed by 46 people, 44 of whom were doctors and others involved in public health. I should emphasize that I'm probably the only non-health-related official in there, although I have done some work on health issues in the past, and in fact continue to have a very active interest in COVID-19, not only in Malaysia, but also all over the world. I think what is very clear is that there is a need for calibration. I think it would be wrong and unfair describe the current measures as simply a continuation of the past. But I think where the disagreement is over the nature of the measures and over the efficacy of those measures. And for instance, there have been many developments all over the world which we can learn from. And also, very importantly, there are new tests which have been developed, and these tests have been found to be quite efficacious. But more importantly, they are also much cheaper. For example, the test of using antigens as opposed to antibodies is a big, major step forward. It allows almost immediate diagnosis and assessment, and it also this means early action because, as we know, there are many people all over the world who do not necessarily show any symptoms, but they may well be infected as well as infectious. So it is very important that we realize all these problems which we have in dealing with this problem, with this, and not rely on a sort of, the vaccine is going to solve all our problems kind of approach.
Well, in that letter, in the open letter to the Prime Minister, you and the others that undersigned it, gave 10 really, I think, really important and urgent, critical proposals to deal with the pandemic. I am struggling, Jomo, to understand where this emergency comes in. How does this emergency help us deal with the current pandemic?
I think you would have to ask the Prime Minister's spokesman to answer that persuasively. I think most people either to try to rationalize that. Most people recognize that there is a public health emergency. Most people also recognize that there was some progress in the early weeks and months, but that the situation has regressed. And part of the problem, of course, is the sort of a reliance on state shelter lockdowns. Not enough testing, not enough contact tracing, adequate measures to deal and contain the contagion. It is challenging, undoubtedly, and I think it is the intention of the 46 to try to improve policy, and it's not the intention of the 46 signatories of the letter to undermine public health efforts to deal with the situation.
Jomo, the Prime Minister in his address was at pains to kind of paint this as a special type of emergency. In previous iterations, you know, there was this talk about a health emergency, and today we hear it's an administrative emergency, not, you know, military-style emergency, and so on and so forth. But what is the consequence for the country of any kind of emergency of this sort? I mean, does it augur well for confidence in the country and its economy? How do you think this is going to be read?
It's difficult to tell because, as you know, some countries have done far worse. Some so-called developed countries like the US and the UK have fared much, much worse than we have. But I think that is a very, very low bar to compare ourselves against when we consider that that our East Asian neighbors have generally done much better, leaving aside, of course, the island countries in the region. But if we think about Japan, we think about Korea, we think about Taiwan province, we think about China itself, and besides Vietnam and Laos and so on, I think there's a lot which we should learn from them about how they have contained the situation. Unfortunately, we are not doing that. There are also some own goals, as I put it. For example, you know, the Singapore second wave, so-called second wave, was mainly due to foreign workers. And this was something which was so obvious, given that a former human resources minister had estimated about 6.7 million people in the workforce. 6.7 foreigners in the workforce, two-thirds of whom are basically undocumented. So when you basically refuse to test them, which was a signal which was sent by early on, and I want to emphasize that MOH had a very different view of this. So there are differences within government, but others, there were those who didn't want to test them, and also did not address the various problems which they face. So herding them into barbed wire settlements and so on and so forth is hardly a solution. Nobody is going to come forward to be herded into such conditions and be treated basically as criminal elements. So you really needed a much more nuanced kind of approach. And this, I think, was unfortunately not adopted. So we basically lost about almost half a year carrying on with our sort of slightly semi-repressive types of approach to that. But I think that the key question now is to switch to a much cheaper and faster and almost as accurate method of testing, which would basically enable a great deal more people to be tested. And sometimes there will be the need for repeat testing, because just because you're not infected, say, a month ago, doesn't mean you may not be infected in the interim. So a lot needs to be done. I do hope that the Prime Minister and his team will look at this, but I think there is a need for an all-of-government approach and a whole-of-society approach. And this, too, we have been emphasizing since about 9 months ago. And unfortunately, there is only partial evidence of the adoption of such an approach. So I think...
Jomo, very quickly, are you confident that we will not waste the months that we are now trying to buy through an emergency plus MCO approach? Do you think we will waste it yet again?
It remains to be seen. I mean, I think one has to recognize that there have been some improvements, although there have been also important steps backwards. If you look, for example, at the announcing national numbers, basically does not tell us very much about the situation on the West Coast in the major urban conurbations in the West Coast. We really need a much more nuanced kind of approach. And, you know, in Vietnam, for example, you had approaches where, you know, particular neighborhoods, particular communes, as they call them, were basically isolated. And there was never a national or even a Hanoi-wide or a Ho Chi Minh City-wide stay-in-shelter lockdown. So always a much more targeted approach would be far more effective. But you really need to get everybody involved, including migrant workers, who are often very poorly treated in our society, very unfortunately. But without their goodwill and their cooperation, I'm afraid we are going to have, you know, it's going to be one step forward, one step back, and sometimes two steps backward.
Jomo, thank you so much for joining us on the show tonight. We really do appreciate your time and you sharing your insights with us. We're going to take a quick break here on Consider This, but we will be back with more, so stay tuned.